Welcome, guys, to our Break Free podcast, episode 3. A little bit of a different dynamic for this one because my handsome, tanned friend, Lee Butler, is in here.
Is he talking up his tan?
He paid me to say that. the previous two podcasts we've done, Lee was asking me the questions of the DJ, so he was sort of hosting it, and I just sat there swearing, which I'll try and tone down today. So it's a little bit of a different dynamic. But something I'm really excited about, and I'm really grateful to be in this sort of position and talk about what we're talking about today. And it's the what comes after sobriety and the different level of work that I'm really passionate about outside of just the addiction side of things. And it's an absolute pleasure to be here with you two. Two people who are very important to me, two people who've helped me a lot as well. Got emotional saying like that. I'm joined by, I'll let you introduce the names, Lauren, shall I? Seeing as you always get my name wrong. Lauren Gwynn and Jen Baer, just I'll save you there.
I was showing off.
Yeah, I love it.
Showing off already.
Showing off because I know everyone's name. Get on me. This is the levels I've got to in life.
What happens when you give people power?
I know my mate's names. how are you?
Good. We're excited to be here, aren't we? We've been waiting for this for a while.
Yeah, feeling absolutely excited to be here. It's been a long time coming, hasn't it?
I've personally been thinking about this.
Yeah.
This other level of work, this other type of program that was needed. I've personally been thinking about this for a long time.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Been trying to sort of figure out how I do it within Break Free.
Yeah.
Because I could see it.
Yeah.
And then when we got really close, like we met in here, funny enough, wasn't it? We were one of those things, you know, when you're sort of mates with someone and you feel like you know them and then you've actually never met. Because
yeah.
We were like on social media and we were sort of, because my family had done your program so many people I knew and we were talking on. But then when we sort of met, we'd never met in person.
It was so weird, wasn't it? Yeah, so like we've like probably worked alongside each other in different community aspects, you with recovery and addiction and me with self-development in different ways, wasn't it? And I think it was like 4 years, is it? So as Marcus has just been saying, I have coached your sister, haven't I? Your daughter, your niece. And throughout over the last couple of years, we've had loads of people come from Break Free to the Wild Warriors, haven't we? Another business that I used to run and then back and forth. So I remember you actually texted me, I don't know if you remember this, on Christmas Day. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And I was really surprised and you kind of said, I just want to say really, I'm really thankful for you for the work that you've done with my family and I can notice it and everything. And I remember breaking down and saying to you, like, I really appreciate this message. And I shared with you that I had somebody who was struggling with addiction at the time. But then we met each other. It was just weird, wasn't it? It was years later, and I think the worlds collided, and we met each other at the exact time that we were meant to meet, wasn't it?
Well, I was going through a very difficult time, quite a traumatic time I went through, not from an addiction point of view, but life circumstances. Yeah. And then that's where we met at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah, we did.
And then that's when we got really close, started talking about stuff, and all these ideas that I've had in my head around this other type of work and this other program that I wanted to sort of introduce into Break Free. That's when this has really started getting momentum. And then we've been talking about it. And I've met Jen through Lauren and it's again.
There's no coincidences, are there? Because like Lauren and I met through Lauren's other business, the Wild Warrior Women, when I'd come back from having like a bit of a break and traveling the world and going on my own journey, which I know we'll go into our personal journeys a little bit later. But when we met, we realised that we had a lot of overlap in our stories.
Yes.
Again, and an undercurrent of addiction impacting us both through our relationships. And there were all these similarities. And it does make you think there's no coincidences in life that we're all sat around this table at this moment in time. And, you know, the rest is history and let's see what happens going forward.
Yeah, it's so exciting.
And if you think of it from that point of view, I know all of us coming together like that and now we're co-founders of the new programme that we've not only... It's not just thoughts now. It's like I've seen that Jim Rohn, if you've heard of him, seen any business, he says like everything that you see has been created twice, once in the mind and then once in reality. And it's like
bringing your dreams to life, isn't
it? I've been thinking about this for so long. And then we started talking about it and then we all got together and now it's happening.
Yeah.
And that's what this podcast is about.
Yeah.
The previous two we've done has been very much on bit of my story, Lee's story, Break Free and stuff like that. And this is specifically going to be around what we're talking about is the other type of work.
Yeah.
And as we were saying then, sort of how it's come about.
So our programme is called Beyond Breaking Free. So I remember having a conversation with you in the sauna. And that's when we got intimate in, you know, conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
And you said to me, and I'd love you to explore this for everybody else. You were just on the back end of your relationship breaking down. And you looked at me and you were really emotional. And you remember what you said about this being a you problem and something that you want to share that with everybody who's listening? Like what's coming up for you at the time?
So
you were affirming your recovery.
You've
got a wonderful business and then all of a sudden life started falling apart. Yeah. So let's just explore that.
And I've been through, like I always say to people, like that you have to have the ability to control your addiction, life on life terms, in difficult situations. And I've been through a lot of difficult situations during my recovery, serious health conditions, all kinds of normal problems, like people passing away and stresses and all of those things. And never drink or use. I'll never drink or take a drug ever again. But I was in a long-term relationship due to get married, and that I'm not going to go too much into it to sound like I'm using this as a platform to try and attack another person in the area. But the relationship broke down, and it was quite traumatic to me. And in the moment, I mean, I just remember it was just like I was up to my neck in emotions, triggers, addiction coming in. So, but as I say, I'm well-skilled on feeling my emotions, is my addiction can control that.
Yeah.
And there's all like emotions where there's anger, and you've got to express that. But then, as I said, I was sitting with you and I thought, because I was saying to people, I thought, I had the awareness that I'm 42 and I'm in another failed relationship. I had the awareness to look at that relationship and know that we weren't compatible in parts. We weren't good enough. I'll take that back. We wasn't compatible. It wasn't some levels, but not on the right levels. Codependent. Was scared of being alone. I've always let women mother me. Going back from when my dad left, my mum's always mothered me. My sister did, my nan did. I let women mother me. So there was this fear of being alone. And when that happened, it was like, and because of the awareness that I do have now, it was like, you have to own this now.
Yeah.
This is just put you in a position in life now where, no, I'm not going to drink and use. I have to take accountability for this.
Yeah.
I always find that though with any situation really, it's like whatever's gone on, even if someone's betrayed me, if someone's done something to me, is there some sort of accountability I can take here for me to learn?
Yeah.
Like why was I this person so close to me to hurt me?
Yeah.
Why did I stay in a situation when I knew that I shouldn't have been there?
Yeah.
And I mean not just in this, in other situations. I always think like, but where's my lens here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I'm taking accountability, I'm not angry. Anger's just a swear then. Anger's a terrible emotion. You've got to sort of feel it as it affairs.
Yeah, and do you know what? Just on that point of emotions, I do think we put labels on emotions, don't we, as human beings? Because our human rational mind has to identify and categorize everything. I am this person. I am this feeling. But actually, anger is just one of many emotions, and emotions are just energy moving through the body. And, you know, sometimes it's neither good or bad, it just is. But how that manifests in our life and how we explore that feeling and then, you know, we lash out on other people, there are unhealthy ways that we then express those emotions because we don't know how to sit with it, we don't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't invalidate that feeling. Like, you know, there's lots of times where we've all been angry and it's absolutely justified.
Yeah.
It's how we then deal with that.
Yeah. I always say anger is healthy because it does sometimes advise us or make us understand that somebody's overstepped a boundary of us. Yeah. However, being aggressive is not. And when you are aggressive, it's like you haven't actually held or navigated through that anger or sat with it or used it in a healthy way. Yeah. Do you know what
it's
I mean?
It's like Gabor Mate talks about a healthy expression of emotion.
Yes.
Like if you say if someone's overstepped a boundary, it's like animals do. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But for me, it was like, I need to express this.
Yeah.
But I've also experienced throughout my life that I've stayed angry at people, and it's like I've stayed stuck in time.
Yeah,
and the like thing I'm angry at someone for someone done something to me years ago, and it's like I'm emotionally stuck at
you're
this
you're putting
point.
Yourself in victim consciousness, yeah. Don't you?
And I think if you're angry, yeah. You're blaming.
Yeah,
I think,
yeah.
Okay, I'm going to blame you for what you've done, but there's got to be a point where I've let go of that, and yeah, okay, yeah. I'm going to work through it. And that was sort of what I went through a lot of that with it, where, okay, I was angry and expressed it, but then it was the more like, what am I going to now do with this?
Yeah.
Experience, certainly with the work that I do, the awareness that I have.
Yeah.
I always want to improve and I want to be better. Yeah. And I knew I would never drink and use again, but I also know that this is a pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even recognising that, like once you've got some level of consciousness, you can't unsee things. And it's so hard to avoid it. And that's part of the challenge of opening up your awareness, isn't it? And expanding that. Then you know, when you take personal responsibility, you're actually taking your power back because you're saying, look, do you know, some of this stuff I need to own. Mm. And that was certainly our experience of, do you know, we can sit there and we can blame and shame other people and go, this person has done this to me. Or we can look at ourselves and say, well, we've obviously tolerated situations that we shouldn't have been in because they're not healthy, they're not safe, they're not aligned. Mm. That's what we're talking about. You know, relationships are a wonderful experience because what they do is bring this mirror up to show us the work we still need to do on ourselves. Yeah. And it's not because that person is necessarily wrong or bad. It's just different. Our values are not in sync. And that's what the triggers are. You're feeling massively triggered because somebody has crossed a boundary of yours, and that feeling is bringing up all this energy in your body, isn't it? Yeah,
and obviously, just going on to triggers, Jen, we know from the deeper work that we explore, you know, in the programme and the programme that we've created, where we actually do look at triggers, don't we? And we understand that triggers are our treasure.
Yeah.
And it's illuminating an unconscious, unmet, unhealed part of us. It's recycling an experience from childhood, isn't it? And we explored this on the programme, didn't we? We looked at... I think some of the biggest realizations for you were looking at the internal wounds that we've had created. A little bit for people who are watching this and don't know what I mean by wounds. Say, for example, you fall over and you hurt your knee and your knee's bleeding. You're able to absolutely look at that and see the love and care, how we look after it, whether it needs to be cleaned out so it doesn't get infected. But say, for example, you are abandoned or you've got an emotionally unavailable father. You know, you've got a mother that shames you constantly, or she's scared of having a full expression. This will create internal wounds within us, abandonment, rejection, fear, scarcity. Shame, control. And this is something that you really leaned into when you did a program with myself, and it's something that we have weaved into this.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is, like, understand this program is going to absolutely allow people to understand self-explore and self-mastery. They're going to be the master of themselves, aren't they?
It's the most powerful thing you can do is understand yourself on a deeper level.
Something I always drill into. Anyone who's been in Break Free, is that what I drill into them?
Yeah.
Because what you were saying then about like tolerating, it's the tolerating staying in situations that you shouldn't be in through fear.
Yeah.
So the fear of me being alone is changing my behavior. So who's accountable for that?
Yeah.
Is it them or me? Yeah. That's, you know what I mean? And I was like... Yeah. Wow, and I had that moment of, right, okay, I need to look at why am I doing this? Where is this coming from? What's driving these things?
And one of the most powerful things I think we can do in life is get curious. We get curious about ourselves and get curious about other people because that opens up possibility. And when we come into situations, like, and it's not just romantic relationships, it's business situations, any kind of endeavour we go into, we've all got this backpack we're carrying around of all our traumas, big T traumas, little T traumas, which we'll go into later, but all the experiences of in life that we've carried that we haven't healed. And then we bring that and we meet another person and they're wearing their own backpack and they're like, oh, okay. And they've got their own experience of what's happened to them and their own views, their own values, their own map of the world of why they think the way they do. And those values or those experiences clash. And then we put that on another person and we expect them to make us feel a certain way because we have expectations and our own expectations actually cause us a lot of deep suffering.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, I thought you would give me this. I thought you would make me feel this way. But actually our deep inner work is to give all of that to ourselves, fill our own cup up to be able to bring our full self, our full expression to any situation so that we can want and desire something to enhance our life, but we don't need it.
Exactly,
and we don't come from a place of fear and lack. Yeah. And that's the magic.
Yeah, fear was a big one. And the reason I'm so passionate about this and why I want to bring it in and I want everyone to do it is because people who've known me a long time, certainly anyone who's been through Break Free, I wasn't someone who they would have looked at and gone, he's in a bad place. I wasn't in a bad place. Because what I was always setting my parameter to, or like setting my bar as, I'm not drinking use no more. Mm. I'm not as fucking mad as I used to be. Yeah. I'm not getting problem with the police no more, and I'm not relapsing, and I'm not going missing, and I'm paying my bills, and I'm setting my standard by what I was like in addiction, which was very low. To say the least, like, you don't want to be setting your standards by what I was like in addiction. Kids, don't do that. It's not what you want to do. But then some people who've been around me, and then when the sort of I went into this sort of type of work, I know sometimes because of people seeing how hurt I was, they were like, "Oh, you're all right, you've done nothing wrong." Because people want to make you feel better. Yeah. I was like, no, I am all right. And I'm not as bad as I was in addiction, but there's still work for me to do.
Yeah.
This is still causing me problems.
And that's what we were talking about. It's this concept of you when you come out of active addiction, you must have this sense of feeling so relieved that the chaos isn't there, the using isn't there anymore. But actually, there's still this sort of deep level of fulfillment that's still available to you if you choose it. Yeah. And that doesn't mean your life might be in a really bad place. You might have really have like cleaned everything up and feeling like in a good place. But there may be relationships that need mending within your family unit.
Yeah.
There may be confidence issues. There's also this kind of transition, and you know, not just people coming out of coming through the recovery space, but if you've gone through any major life transition, a divorce, grief, any of those things, your identity shifts. And you know, Lauren and I've worked with a lot of people who've gone through this massive identity shift. We've had it ourselves.
Yeah.
And you know, when you stop identifying as the addict, and you want to step away from that as your label, because we attach, you know, this is who I identify as. Actually, these are just behaviours. That's not who we are as people. Mm. These are just coping mechanisms we've had along the way, and it's different for everybody. But there is this other level of fulfilment that is available to explore, which is what you were looking for when you felt that nudge.
It was like, because of how long I was in addiction and how chaotic most addicts are, and it's so consuming, like it's controlling all your behaviours, and not only whatever traumas you've got before, and just adding more and more and more on, and your life just is totally out of control. You feel like you can't cope, you can't manage, it's horrendous. You then get a period of time you're not drinking, taking drugs. Number one, certainly the way we work, where you're understanding it, you're controlling it. A lot of the problems that are created in addiction sort of organically started to reverse themselves. But then I got so far into the point of like, okay, I've corrected so much. Again, I was in a fucking unbelievable place. Sorry for the language. I was in an unbelievable place.
He's
I was.
Any swears, doesn't he?
But then I was like, I didn't only just come this far to only come this far.
Oh, I love that. What film's that off? I never come this far to only come this far.
That's what I remember thinking like. I'm going to have to Google that. That's what I remember thinking like. Practice what you preach. I'm always going, beginner's mindset, the work doesn't stop. So for me, it was like, okay, I'm 4.5 years in at this point into me recovery.
Yeah.
But this is now where I'm currently at on this journey. And it was I'm not using. But this has just gone, look at all this stuff.
Yeah.
This has brought up a lot of stuff that had been suppressed down there that didn't actually come really. I felt like it really got brought to me attention. It really come into me awareness when it all happened. And I was like, I have a choice here where my ego can live with this. Oh, I've done nothing wrong. And everyone will pacify it as well. Oh, yeah. I'm sound. It's all in. And it's like, no. And then I really started to look at that. And then just outside of my own circumstances, but I used to look at like, okay, when I was in recovery for years, I used to be able to stop. If you speak to a lot of addicts who've been in service for a long time, three, falling off your wagon.
Yeah.
Why are people falling off the wagon?
Yeah.
Because if you're powerless, I'd be using every day.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to get 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months once. Why was I relapsing? That's why when I started the program, I thought there's more than just stopping, because there's more you need to understand. There's more to don't go to the pub, don't just drink.
Yeah.
And when I was looking, I look back over my own relapses when I set the program, I thought there's more to it than just not using. And then when I see people who I work with, you can get their addiction under control, and then you get into that point of, like, you're so far here, you're not drinking, using, you've reversed a lot of problems, but then it shows you the stuff that was maybe there before addiction, the things that got worse in addiction, it brings you into a position where, okay, look, now look at that. And I look back over my own time and thought, the amount of relapses after I got, I mean, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 8 months, I was doing a long time.
Good period of time, yeah.
It was always my behaviours or me not regulating emotions, yeah. Attachments, yeah. Poor choices, reactiveness.
Yeah. So there's got to be an experiences that obviously yeah. triggered that. So can I just ask then on that note, because obviously you've got all of these people that have been coming through the service and what a wonderful job you and Lee have done and Break Free team. Mm-hmm. So, you know, commending and honouring you all, especially the people who are willing and able to go onto your programme and really put in the work. But what are some of the, like you're saying now, can you give us some examples? You don't obviously have to name names of what people then still come to you and this is why you've went, you know, what we need this.
It's like just my own example here, but like there's pretty much everyone. Now, the way I look at it, as we were talking about, we were talking to Gabor Martin, I mean, look, I've worked with thousands of people. Some have had serious trauma. Some used to turn to abuse, turn to addiction. Some was like environmental conditioning. And there's been so many. I look at each person like a vessel with their own life experience. It's like, right, but when you get someone who's in addiction, whatever path led you to addiction, once that's developed and you're there, it's so dominant, honestly. Mm. It's so dominant in your brain where it's like, say, for example, I started drinking and taking drugs to cope with mask over emotions or trauma. Mm. Once you end up with an addiction, it's using that trauma to keep you there.
Yeah.
So then it's actually using the thing that got you there to keep you there. And that's what it feels like. Yeah. So it was like, how I look at it is, unless you can develop the ability to stop using, understand it, aware of it, recognize it, and control the addiction in them moments, nothing else matters. You can't do none of this type of stuff because you just keep adding more of this type of stuff to the problem. Yeah.
Well, that's why we were talking about that analogy, weren't we? Why we've, the program's been separated out into two levels as well, because, you know, when people come through the doors of Break Free, it's triage, isn't it? It's like, you know, you've got a bleed on an artery and you need to stop that to help save somebody's life. People are in like quite catastrophic situations sometimes, and that is your number one driver. You're not going to sit there at that stage and analyze, well, how did you manage to cut yourself open there? That's not the priority at that stage. The priority is getting people in a very stable condition so that they can start to live again.
Because if you start bringing up, you get people early on, a couple of weeks in the program, they start bringing up abuse or sexual abuse or whatever. You bring that up too early, they relapse.
Yeah.
Because they haven't developed the ability to regulate any of these emotions. Yeah. And when these things come up, they then, and it's the victim mentality and the excuses that their addiction's been feeding off for years. So there's so much work that has to go into it to rewire the brain and use the tools that we use. So you're creating different neural pathways and you're developing a bit of resilience so that you're changing this mindset and you're getting rid of this victim mask and you own your shit is basically what we say. Like, can't keep blaming.
Yeah.
And with a total overall of like, you're getting this person's like, right, all of these things have to go and it's extremely difficult. And then you do that. But then it's the...
what else list, isn't it?
Because it's like, well, that's my addiction. But I was abused when I was five. Well, not me personally, but like people, but I was abused when I was five.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Before I'd ever drank and took a drug. Okay, that's maybe made you more susceptible to addiction, but they'll come to me and go, look, I really struggle in crowds. I feel a lot of the time is, because we'd have a big group, is I don't fit in. I feel like I don't belong. And it's I used to feel like that in environments. And it was like, it's not the environment, it's me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My worth, I don't.
Yeah, the unworthiness, like scared of being rejected, conflict.
A lot of the time, as you say, abandoned.
Yeah, you've been abandoned.
Loads of them. So when people were coming to me with, they're not thinking using for 6 months, but then all of this stuff from childhood and then it opened
up. And you can see that now, can't you? Like you say all the time, like I'm in the programme now and I can see based on how they were, you know, conditioned when they were a child and programming and say if they've had some a parent who's left them, you can really see how this is being recycled right now in this moment and effects and then.
And the way we do it, like we're very good in regards to, you'll see certain behaviours and emotions and it's like, and then their addiction comes in and hijacks it all.
Yeah.
So we're very much like, right, your addiction's trying to use this.
Yeah.
Okay, now that you're not drinking and using and all of these things, or a trigger comes up, the addiction comes in with that. And it's like, right, okay, it's using that, but then what is that? What's the problem? We need to go a little bit deeper. And then people will come to me with, and as I said to you then, I can't ignore what I'm seeing.
So
I have a responsibility, and not just I have a responsibility, but also I want to be offer the best. I want to offer the best support we can. I want to help as many people as we can, and just getting people stopping drinking and using for me isn't enough.
No, it's not enough.
Well, you've seen what's possible, haven't you, on a mass level across the city, and not even just across the city. Like your reach is wider than just Liverpool, isn't it? With the people that you're supporting, and when you've seen how people can go from the situations they're in to where, like, you know what's possible for people, and that passion, that fuel, you know, to take people from being in the depths of despair sometimes to kind of saying, I'm getting my life back now. I'm really like on stable ground, to then saying, but you know what else? I've done all this other stuff and I know how I can feel even better. Because I think one of the big challenges when you come out of addiction and you're really in a good place in your sobriety is that all this stuff that comes up for you, you've got to witness it for the first time you're sober. Mm. And in the past, all those emotions were there. So everything down here is still here. But you've, before, the coping mechanisms have been to avoid, run, escape, use, yeah. all of those kind of coping mechanisms. But now you don't have those. You choose not to lean on those things.
You know what you'll see, like me personally, and like the unbelievable fella who's in the program now, going through a really difficult time. What a fella. But he's in this, he's got not addiction led, something really traumatic's happened that he didn't create, but he's with the emotions. Yeah. And it's like, we've never, like, emotionally immature. Like, a lot of us started drinking, taking drugs from 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Like, we're emotionally immature. And it's like, I go back. Even still to a relative degree. But certainly I remember what it was like in addiction. It's like I just go back to a child.
Yeah.
I couldn't regulate none of my emotions. It was the way I was behaving. It was just, and then what we work with as people is we've just got to stay and feel it. And you see it's like I was saying, since I was a kid, it was the avoidance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we started drinking and taking drugs. Most of us from 12, 13, 14. Yeah. Or then we maybe didn't, because you say your caregivers, your mum and your dad, they didn't, shut up. Go to you, don't like shame, don't be crying, you little girl. And so many people have suppressed, not dealt with their emotions, then started drinking and using. And now we're 30, 40, 50 years of age. And then it's like, what do I do with this?
And a lot of us are just grown. We look like grown-ups, but it's just actually little kids walking around in bigger bodies. Yeah. And the emotional maturity part is something that this work leans into.
Yeah.
Looking at the inner child and the things that have happened and how we can sit with them. Because often it's that 11-year-old version of yourself that needed to be told by a parent, like, you are good enough. I do see you. Yeah. I am here for you. And what we'll teach in level two is about how you can give that to yourself now.
So let's talk about, like you've just said, about emotional maturity, and we know that that's like the inability to tolerate emotions. Now, something I know that we've both spoken about, what we witness when people go through recovery, is we spoke about it before, but in recovery, they've recovered from addiction and then they're in a relationship with their partner. And this is another reason why we set up level two. They're in a relationship with a partner. They've got the children. But it's kind of, I feel, and I've definitely seen that you can we talked about masks, you can then wear the recovery mask, where I am in recovery, to have done enough work now, you know, I've done enough work. So then obviously what we want to do with level two, and why we've created it as well, is to make sure that no families are getting left behind, and we're helping everybody heal, aren't we? And we're helping everybody move up together, because something that I certainly have noticed, and I noticed it in my own personal circumstances, and you might have noticed it, Marcus, is when family members are then trying to communicate with a loved one, like, I'm here, there's still collateral damage from the experiences that you've given me. As you said before, Jen, it's like, oh, well, I don't want to deal with that right now. I'm in recovery, that's it. Like, leave it there. But what's happening simultaneously in two people is, you know, say, for example, it's the partner. Their nervous system is heightened. They're in fight or flight. They're being avoided. They're not, their, you know, vulnerability and the things they've gone through is not being emotionally held. And then the person who's saying that is not helping themselves, because they're actually pushing down all of the shame, you know, deep-rooted shame, because there is shame there for the experiences they've had, but it should be met compassionately. It's not to blame or shame. So then they're putting it down and they're running and disassociating and things like that. Or they might go and put themselves into work, or they might go on the phone, or they might feel deep resentment.
This element, so this is what we will get into it again, and all the family type of side of things, it fascinates me. So you might correct me if I'm wrong here, but a lot of I can't be wrong, I've seen it too many times. So you get someone maybe joining the program who's in addiction, but the partner's not. They've been together for 10 years. They stop drinking and taking drugs, and then they stop getting on even more. Sometimes they split up.
Yeah.
And it's like, for me, it's like, this might trigger people. So
join the program.
So follow the link if you do.
It's a key indicator.
For me, I think an addict, if you as maybe have low self-worth or you're insecure, an addict makes you feel safe because you won't leave.
Yeah.
It's like...
codependency.
Yeah. I was always, I'm sorry, I need them. So they're like the role of the rescuer.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And then when you don't need to apologise no more and you're actually getting your confidence back and you look a bit better and you're going out and you're doing things and you've got new mates and you're going to the gym, I feel like it triggers their insecurities. Then it's that break free, you've changed.
And what's really going on there?
Sort of growing them. Grow apart instead of sort of growing together. That's where they're both, as we were saying, both got to do a...
There's two elements of it. There's that part, but then there's also, or the person who's in recovery emotionally avoiding, compassionately holding them, witnessing them. And like, that's what we've explored with the introduction programme of Break Free.
Sorry for interrupting, just on this point, is a valid point. I was doing it.
Oh, okay.
So this is why I want to bring it back. I'll always make accountability. So when I was a kid... And I couldn't, you know, when you're a child, it's, I'm running away. And I remember I'd go and sit in like all under my bed, at the cabin bed, I'd sit in the bed, I'm running away.
It makes it sound magical and it's probably going to be dead trauma.
I'd sit in like the cemetery until I got hungry, but I'd go, I'm running away and I'd avoid.
Yeah.
And then when I was in addiction, any sort of argument, I'd storm out and I'd go to the pub.
Yeah.
And I was still doing it, but I was going to the gym.
Yes.
And then so I was arguing with the panel, I'm going out. And then it would cause, in my mind, it was like, well, I'm not using them, going to the gym, and then I thought, I'm still running away.
Yeah.
As soon as I got into and like conflict.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can have conflict without arguing.
Yes.
But I couldn't navigate it. I couldn't regulate my emotions. So as soon as someone disagreed with me, ego, bang, reactiveness. But because I wasn't going to the pub,
yeah,
I was still running away, but I was going to the gym, and I was like...
It's that thing, isn't it?
Like, gives you a permission slip, really, doesn't it? Like, hand validity.
Again, it was another thing I was doing for years.
And it's like you said before, everything's a bit better because at least I'm not using. So it's that mindset again. You should be grateful because I could be using right now.
Yeah.
I couldn't have someone... Like, now I'm a very more accountable, a lot more humble, but if someone would... Anyone, if it was in a relationship or anyone, my mum, I'd be like... And because I was going to the gym, and like, it took me a long time for the money to drop, so I'm not that aware... But I was like...
Were you still emotionally immature then?
Badly.
That's exactly
and
that's what it
why,
is, yeah.
And that was, I'll be honest with you, that was up until about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
About 2 years ago, where I got onto the... I'm still... As soon as things get a little bit uncomfortable, conflict, could not communicate how I felt, or listening to how they felt. I'll take that back.
Mm.
How do they feel? So that as soon as someone would go against, sort of, I was triggered or I was emotional, my ego just wants to win the argument, and then I'm leaving, boom, just get off.
But if you think about it, as a society, we our environmental like influences are, when there's conflict is bad, and conflict means aggression.
Yeah.
And we have associations with what conflict means. So we as soon as we feel an uncomfortable conversation come up, if we don't know how to manage and regulate that, what we do is we go into our body patterned behaviours, which is, you know, yours might be I leave, someone else's might be I attack. So there's all the different elements of how our nervous system is patterned to behave. And once we understand that, well, someone can have a different opinion to us or a different perspective of a situation. The same thing's going on. You know, there's that whole saying, there's normally their truth, your truth, and somewhere in between is the reality of what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's so
that
true.
None of us can say.
But we can't
have
say.
A percentage of what's right. Yeah. You can only focus on your 1%.
Yeah.
And if you just literally shift your perspective, you might go, oh, actually, I do see what you mean there. And that's conflict resolution. Yeah. And this is something we go into in level two in the module about communication and nonviolent communication, is about there are other ways to resolve things. You know, in those instances now, when you've got those tools, that feeling of conflict comes up in a relationship, you realise that your nervous system is being flooded, you're activated, you can't take any information in, your brain is on fire. Mm-hmm. So trying to have a rational conversation with somebody who's in that energetic state and their nervous system is flooded isn't going to work. But what having the tools that we will give you are things like practicing the pause, understanding that in that moment you need to say to somebody, look, I'm feeling really activated here, I just need some time out, I'm not leaving you, I'm coming back, I just need a bit of space. And then it's all about the repair, because we're allowed to have different opinions and different perspectives. It's how we repair situations. Nothing is ever irreparable. It's all based on, are we willing to go there? Are we willing to put our ego to one side? Are we willing to be open to not being right all the time? And that's the game changer in a dynamic, in any kind of relationship.
The community, like, sometimes they heal, you all right? And you know they're not. But then they're so used to not telling you, because if they tell you, you'll react. And so I was very much avoidance. Or if then I'm staying, I was so reactive. So there was no... So it was like, I need to get out of here because I'm going to kick off. Conditioning myself.
And fear, you know, like, sort of from a man and woman point of view, sometimes it's not always this way around, but it can be... women still have that little bit, oh God, he's going to go on the attack, he's going to get aggressive. Yeah, yeah. And then we don't feel emotionally safe to open up and be vulnerable.
Yeah.
But what we want to say is, you know, in this moment, I feel like you're going to leave me and not come back. And that gives me a lot of fear.
Yeah.
But we don't want to be that vulnerable. And really, as a man, you know, you're thinking, you know, probably the same, but your way of dealing with it is to stonewall somebody or, you know, go quiet or leave.
It was a lot of that toxic masculinity of like, men don't talk, don't cry, yeah, don't show your feelings. So a lot of senior people around my age or older grow up with that.
Yeah.
And you're just suppressing everything and then it's all coming out the wrong way. And this is like, this is the type of stuff that when we done that work together,
yeah,
it hasn't half helped, as you said. And as soon as I get to, I feel triggered. Boom.
Yeah.
So, you know, just say it straight away. And it's like, oh, do you why? Oh, this why? And then boom, that's it.
When you go into this work, it's like you get another language that you've never, it's like you're pulling the curtain back and going, was there all this stuff there all the time that nobody ever told me about?
Yeah.
And it's available for everyone. This isn't just for people who've gone on a recovery journey. This is stuff that people should be getting taught from day one. And a lot of the common feedback you get, I know from like the taster programs you've done and all the work, and is, how am I learning this in my 40s and 50s? Why has no one ever told me this stuff before? Imagine the power that you would have if somebody told you this when you were a child. But the amazing thing is, there's never a too late a time to start this work, because you have a ripple effect across your family. The healing of the generational trauma, which I know is something like you'll speak into, Lauren, is the power of that, to pass this message on to your children and to give them the tools that you never had, prevents all of these issues in the future.
So I've seen it in my son. So he grew up around me during my time in addiction, steroids and violence and fighting in front of him. And then I didn't see him for a long time through addiction, and then he's back living with me. And I seen the effects of him living with me through them years of them all same behaviours in him, which obviously reversing now. And we talk and we open up and I'm like, listen, that is not how a man should be, type of thing.
Yeah.
Emotional saying that. But I seen that within my own son. It's like, so much stuff I poured down onto him, and the way he see me growing up, when he was growing up, and it started stopping that.
Yeah.
I mean, even though, okay, look, I was late 30s, but when I started, this type of stuff went to my 40s.
Yeah.
But as you said, then I can still improve the rest of my life. It still means I can help more people, and I can stop my son growing up the type of man I am with this type of sort of the stigma of man's man.
Yeah, so nonsense, like it's incredibly important that we let everybody know that what they don't transform, they will transfer, you know? So, do you like that one?
That's come back at me, hasn't it?
Exactly. Like one, and as you've just said then, it doesn't even matter. You know, it does matter that you're in recovery yet, it does. But then after that, it's being able to notice how you have conditions, programs, your little people have absorbed that throughout their life. It has affected their self-limiting beliefs. You know, they might go out then and, you know, self-soothe, you know, seek validation. They might have a low self-esteem. They might bring in partners who are not supportive and things like that. And, you know, an example of this is like my dad, when we're talking about behaviours and things, my dad was really aggressive, really authoritative. He didn't know better, like you were just saying, back in the olden days, and this is not, you know, saying that this was okay, but back in the olden days, my dad kind of raised us in the generation of, you'll be seen but you won't be heard, and you do as I say, and that's it. And what he thought he was doing was being strict and bringing up a good little girl. He didn't want me to go out. He didn't want me to be on the chads with lads and drinking. He was like, really, you will not. But what happens is, because he didn't give me an inch, because he didn't speak to me in a loving and kind way, because, you know, I went out and like really didn't take an inch. I took a mile. Do you know what I mean? And I remember getting myself in really uncomfortable situations in environments where there was drinks and there was drugs and there was men and things like that. And I remember my dad just saying to me, come on, lol, what the fuck? Like, I've raised you better. And I remember thinking, when I began to do this work, I realised, like, had he raised me better? Because any time that I went to want to say no, Dad, I don't agree, he'd shut me down, he'd hit me, he'd punish me. So from a very young age, it was hot wires into me. You don't open your mouth, Lauren. You know, you do not open your mouth.
Yeah.
So then how this has happened is now, like, it's took me years to unbecome and uncondition. But my nervous system was in hard drive. We have a normal conversation. I might need to just speak to you about money. But because I think, oh, my God, there's going to be a little bit of conflict here, or somebody's going to criticise me, or he's even going... I remember my mate just being dead direct, and she'd go to me, no, And I, or somebody's don't put a kiss on the message. Yeah. You know what it feels like when somebody's don't put a kiss on the message. My inside to me, if I can really sit with my body, is going into overdrive. What have I done? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And all of this. And I suppose, like, realising that how we condition our children and the way that we speak to our children, how safe we make them feel, it goes beyond just sobriety, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. We have to look at the way we are behaving, the way that we are speaking to them, if you know, because otherwise we're going to impact them.
Because it was the version of me or us at that time in my life, with the addiction and the behaviours was determining personality. The version of me was what was bringing him up.
Yeah.
And that was
a
bad version of me at that point in my life. So that's obviously had effect on my kids. Well, I know.
And when he turns into a teenager, he hasn't got the awareness that of what he's soaked up and that's not, you know, how you are now. And by the age of 7 or 8, we've already got all of these self-limit behaviours. We've got our behaviours. Yeah. We've created habits. We've then developed our personality.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, as Jen will say, like, you know, it's your person's reality, how you see reality. We then begin to play a character, don't we? You know what I mean? And it's just, so I suppose what we do in level 2 is we give so much wisdom, don't we?
Wisdom.
To really begin to understand how we've become.
Yeah. And yet, so when we talk about the story that's brought people into the room when we start the level 2 work, a lot of the things that we will find in the personal journeys that people have had to date, it's still this undercurrent of other behaviours. And I know that, you know, in level 1, Marcus, you talk, don't you, about the other list of behaviours that you still see. And I know there's like a kind of a common theme that occurs, that people have gotten sober, but there's still these other patterns that are impacting their life, and it's preventing them from having like the most fulfilled journey that they could have. You know, it might be worth you just talking a little bit around what you see as being the common things that come up.
Yeah, so this is why, as we were saying, like, there's a need for this work, because, as I say, I can't unsee what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
So we get the addiction under control and we work a lot on the behaviours, the ego and all of these things. And a common theme is like codependency.
Mm.
Relationships is massive. Like, the people still make poor choices with relationships or going back into familiar old partners, the old ignoring red flags. It's like, well, why are we doing that?
Yeah.
Communication, anger. People are still very reactive still, even months and months after not drinking and taking drugs. A lot of childhood trauma, abuse, grief. People addicts suffer a lot of grief. Sort of, you sort of feel like you're grieving yourself at a time.
But
because they're drinking on emotions or using on emotions, then you've actually experienced grief. People close to you throughout your life maybe pass away. You just suppress it, drinking and using, and then it's like they take away the drinking and the drugs now, and it's like this stuff hasn't gone. It's suppressed, and things start coming to the surface, and it's okay, we're controlling the addiction on the back of the emotion, but then it's we don't just want to keep doing that forever.
Mm.
You know what I mean? We want to, this breaking free.
Yeah.
It's breaking free from the addiction, but it's breaking free from this as well.
Yeah.
I don't want to feel like I was a slave to this forever
either. And on that, you know, and I know Lauren can speak into this from the work that you've been doing personally with a lot of people on a one-to-one basis, and also in the group container to do the initial introductory program to level 2, is it's essentially giving people like an emotional detox, because that's what it is. We're clearing out the energetic channel in the body. So yes, we've got the awareness that people have got a lot more awareness when they've come through level 1. There's this deeper level of awareness that they're going to get on level 2. But also what we're going to do on level 2 is we're going to work a lot more with the body, because the body holds the score. The body keeps all of that patterning and that conditioning and that reactive behavior, everything that you've spoke about there. A lot of this is subconscious programming. We're not consciously thinking in our mind, oh, this has just happened to me, therefore I'm going to do that. It's a gut instinct. It's a reflex. It's a natural reaction, because something is presenting in your world and that reminds you, it hits on that wound, that pain, that trauma, and your body goes, in order to feel safe, I therefore need to behave like this.
It's like the Carl Jung thing, they say, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will control your life and call it fated.
Yeah.
When you talk about that level of awareness, it was like that for me. It was like, oh,
all of
these things here, that, as you say, this subconscious stuff that was tucked right under my addiction, that maybe my addiction was using.
Yeah.
all of these things were still
And you know, we've spoken to people on the program and we've had this discussion around what is trauma. It's been like a bit of a topic that we've all discussed, haven't we? And it's, you know, there's this myth that trauma has to be these massive things that have happened in our life. And a lot of people say, well, I haven't had trauma. But there's all these, it's the common thing, isn't it? But actually, there's all these small little T traumas, which are, you know, the time that, you know, you're on the football field and your dad like gave you this look because you, you know, you let a goal in, or somebody shouts something to you, or, you know, you don't feel acknowledged. They're the little small T traumas, but they still have a reoccurring impact, and it creates that patterning and conditioning. But then for some of the bigger experiences, you know, the grief, the loss, the divorce, the sexual trauma, those kind of experiences run really deep. And if they've never been witnessed in a safe space and held, if you've never processed that through your body, that doesn't leave your system until you've done the work around that to regulate your nervous system to be able to acknowledge that your pain is valid. You know, in the past, your addiction might have jumped on the back of that to use. However, that doesn't mean that pain hasn't happened. It doesn't mean that's not still a real life experience that you've had. And I know you've had some really like powerful results, haven't you, with people that have had those deeper experiences and done this work?
Yeah, and just like going back to what you said, Jen, about trauma, we call it in my somatic, you know, world, like complex trauma. And like you said, it is the reoccurring of, for example, you being shamed every single day, the reoccurring of, you know, you being shut down every single day. Sometimes I feel like, you know, when you have those one experiences, like I've had really traumatic events happen to me, that one experience of, you know, sexual abuse, that one, you know, but what actually impacted me was the unavailability, the emotionally, you know, being told constantly that, you know, made to feel like you're not safe and you're not good enough, like that hot wired my nervous system. And something that we do say and something that we weave into the program is anything that's happened to you is not to be competed against, to be compared.
Yeah.
It's like everything that happens to you is valid. What we have come through, a lot of people say, and a lot of people said it to us on the walk, and I know that you've said that, they say it in the rooms, is I've had a normal childhood. But what is normal?
Yeah.
Or is it just something that you're familiar with? And I think this is what this program does. It really gets you to understand and know how you've been conditioned, how you've been programmed. This starts from when we're a child, then it goes from when we've been in school, the expectations, the perfectionism. Yeah. Like how many men have expectations placed on them by their dad that you need to be this level for me to accept you, for me to love you? They might not say that. They might not use this language, but constantly telling you that you're not good enough. So then you go outside of yourself and you start acting out and performing. And it's just
seeking validation, isn't it?
Seeking validation. Yeah. It's weaved into us.
Seeking validation,
womanizing. You've just said it. What about, you know, little girls? And I know that this like comes up for a lot of things, but when you're a man or a woman, and I've seen it myself, you know, in young girls, when you are not loved, when you're not made to feel secure, you go and seek validation in other ways. It's as simple as that. We're human beings, we want connection. We're desperate for connection. Do you know what I mean? And what happens is we disconnect from ourselves, don't we? I even see it now as in children, you know. Instead, we're a disconnected generation, and this is what we're trying to heal. How many people just give the kids an iPad because they don't want to be present with them, or they can't prioritise them? We're stimulating our kids and we're giving them something else instead of connecting with them. And this is what our work is going to prevent, like, for us to really be there. You know, it's preventing generational trauma, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry, I went off on a little bit of
I think it's really important. Then. And I think just...
About time I got a little bit of my career, to be honest, guys. Are you sick of the breath?
She's been triggered there.
Oh, I'm so triggered. I sat with it. I self-soothed. It's not all about me. I understand this now. Do you know what I mean?
I see me. We can feel the growth.
Just so always fair and gentle.
We're all here in each other.
No, but some of the amazing examples that we've had from the Introduction Break Free programme. So for anyone who doesn't know, we took 7 people. There was 9 people on the programme and 7 people have been firmly in their recovery from Break Free. And Marcus, you invited them to join the programme, didn't you? And there was many different reasons in which people joined the programme. But let me just be honest, 8 out of, 9 of them all said, I'm in a great place. I'm in a great place. And that's something that I want to echo and reiterate, because I don't want people thinking that they've got to come here in a certain way or be on the knees, you know.
What I said before, like, anyone will know me. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Life was great.
But, yeah. And it is great.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was, you wouldn't look at, I wasn't all a minute, but
yeah.
I wasn't.
Yeah.
But as we've discussed, like, there's more.
There's things happening inside. Yeah. And this is what, like, you know, this is on the back end of the programme, being like, exploring the hidden forces that drive you. Like you just said before, bringing your shadow, all the unconscious parts of us, behaviours, to light. Because if we do that, we're going to liberate ourselves. We're going to be truly free. Mm. And that's why it's called Beyond Breaking Free.
Yes. Yes.
So some of the transformations that we witnessed in the last programme, we had a beautiful lady and, you know, she'd she had had her parents transition off this earth when she was young. So there is a lot of people that we coach that have been, we would say, and not intentionally abandoned. Mm. You know, they've felt that abandonment, they felt that neglect, in all different forms. And she was able to truly look at and explore how this has affected her self-esteem, how this has allowed her, you know, and now, and when it affects your self-esteem, you begin to really poison yourself, you take yourself apart, you don't feel good enough. And I spoke to a few people on the walk, and that was a common thing that was coming up for a lot of the girls.
Was, yeah,
a lot
I of found the that just kind of loss of identity, not knowing who they are, but yet loss of confidence, like, because, you know, using creates a bit of a false confidence, doesn't it, as well? You know, because it gives you that coat, that armor to wear so you can be protected in environments, because you're not showing your true self.
Yeah, and as soon as we began to have a conversation, Jenna, will it be the same for you? And, you know, straight away it was like, oh, yeah, you know, my mum and dad were using, or I was my dad left at this age, or this happened, or my mum and dad just went away and I wasn't given the connection that I needed. You're immediately aware of it, you know what I mean? But it still doesn't make it okay. And I think our programme allows them to feel compassionate, sort of give themselves empathy, but also understand that your parents can only give you the level of consciousness that they are at the time. Do you know what I mean? So it's dissolving.
I think a person will only meet you as deeply as they've met themselves. Yeah, exactly. You were saying about your dad, it's people from their perception with the information and knowledge, wisdom they've got, they're doing the best they can.
He didn't know better. Do you know what I mean? And when I had that breakthrough conversation with my dad, going back to that, and we looked at how my dad was conditioned, my nan was raised with seven men who were all in the army, all of her brothers. No wonder she, like, she what is it called? Thingies with an iron fist.
Oh, yeah, rules.
I remember her running after me up the stairs to bash me with the brush, do you know what I mean? But then that's like, she was very cold. So that's and angry. So that's regimented. Yeah. So that's how my dad was. And when we had this breakthrough conversation, my dad cries, grown man, cries his eyes out. I am sorry that I treated you that way. I'm sorry. He was dead upset. And I'm like, that's why, like, I love him so much, the accountability.
Because if you look behind the person, so you're angry, you've done this to me, but the...
What's happened to him?
That is it. It's hurt people, hurt people. It's that common theme, isn't it? Which is why this is so important to do this. To as you say, you don't want to transfer all of that, you don't want to bleed onto other people. And, you know, all of this work is not to blame and shame other people.
No.
Everybody is in their own reality because of things that have happened that have been passed down the line because people just did not know better. But we're now of a generation where we do have the access to the wisdom and the knowledge, and we can access all these things if we choose to. And there's a bigger picture than just healing ourselves. It's the knock-on and the ripple effect it has in our families, in our communities. And that's why raising this level of consciousness is so important, because of the impact that this has on a mass scale. And, you know, you've seen it from the Break Free platform, just that one person who impacts that other person, and the domino effect,
the ripple effect,
is so powerful.
Yeah, so like that is, and like you said, Jen, hear people, abandon people, people, you know, it goes on. So some of the other wonderful breakthroughs that we had is, you know, this lady, she completely connected with her body. We've got a gentleman who his intimacy has grown with his wife after years of both being in addiction together, and obviously you can imagine the chaos, the abuse, the pain that has been cultivated in those moments, how that has bled all over the children. And it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, he said himself, he said, I'm 50 odd years of age, and why isn't this taught in school? Yeah. And then after the programme, he was like, can you coach and teach all my kids all of this, everything that you've taught me? You know, his wife then went on the programme. Do you know, they're able to communicate better. They're able to actually not just say, I'm sorry for all of the stuff that we've done, because there's a bit of shame sitting there, and actually looking into each other's eyes and being like, fuck, we put each other through some pain, didn't we? Do you know, and being safe enough to go, I feel deep shame. And, you know, he got really upset. And I remember after the breath work, you know, he had this thing and he said, I forgive myself. I actually really truly forgive myself. I'm not a bad person. I'm not my mistakes. Yeah. And we're not our mistakes. We're not our trauma. We're not the things that have happened to us. And it's incredibly important that we do develop our awareness. We do be accountable and we speak to our family. Mm-hmm. But then we can't live there.
Yeah.
We literally can't live there. You know, we all have to heal. And we've spoken about that, haven't we? We have to get to a point, regardless of who it is, that literally we are responsible for our own healing. We have to save ourselves. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So that was lovely to be able to witness that. One of the biggest breakthroughs, which is really something that I like, so joyous to see, is a gentleman that I actually met via a breath work, and he was having a panic attack. Unbelievable.
I know every person man. You're talking about tomorrow, and I just think they're all just
unbelievable man. People, yeah. And this is the type of work that we do. So, you know, in regards to self-development, and he was having panic attacks all the time. He was on antidepressants. And he's been in recovery for a long time, but he's obviously, this will be common for a lot of people still having antidepressants, because we're still trying to put a plaster over something that's going on inside of us, aren't we? Do you know what I mean? Another common thing that came up a lot as well is people not understanding that they're okay to feel low.
Yeah,
they're okay.
See, a big thing that we, because the majority of the people who come in to break free are on antidepressants. I was medicated for 2 years, but with the, he's one of, if to be fair, that's one thing we do, because I get a lot of shit for it, but I'm like, you don't, a lot of these mental health conditions are symptoms of your addiction, because the neurotransmitters in your brain that regulate your moods and emotions, you're depleting through drink and drug abuse, which then puts you, and then you're like that for, I was like that for 20 years. So I was so down for so long that I was in a depressed state and an anxious state through what I was doing.
Yeah.
And also not just through the chemicals I was abusing, that was depleting these neurotransmitters in my brain. Mm. The state my life was in because of the addiction. No shit, I was depressed.
Yeah.
No shit, I didn't like myself.
It
like I was
makes
a absolute
sense.
Car crash of a human being.
It makes more sense that you're all depressed than you're not when you look at your circumstances.
I shouldn't have liked who I was. I was a mess. And there's no wonder that you wasn't happy.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, because if you go to a doctor and go, oh, look, I feel like killing myself, and this has gone on, this has gone on, oh, you're depressed, yeah, there's extra drugs on top of the drugs you're already taking.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no, because it's no. I was diagnosed with bipolar, psychosis, clinical depression, social anxiety. I was medicated, dosed up to the eyeballs. I had to go and live with my mum's. I don't take no antidepressants. I don't take sleeping tablets. I don't take.
Yeah.
So if I genuinely had those ailments, I'd have them now.
Yeah.
Mm.
They were consequences of my lifestyle and my addiction. So when people come into break free, it's like, we don't just go stop and straight away. But what you find is once they stop drinking, taking drugs, and you control the mind, and then you get them off the drinking drugs, and then the chemicals start to replenish, and then the life improves.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you they come off the antidepressants.
Yeah, brilliant.
It's just like you're trying to mass. It's like what I imagine, it's like having a wall that's broken, and you're just wallpapering over it. But
the wall's
broke behind it.
Yeah.
And do you know what? There is a time and a place where people need that little bit of support, and that's not to shame anybody who requires medication. There is a place for that. But what I think we would all say from the holistic side and everything that we believe in and follow is that doesn't mean you have to be stuck in that place forever. Mm. Because once you've done the healing work that you need to do, and you've corrected the chemicals in your body, and you've worked on all of those things, then you will be able to experience those emotions without judging them, without being in fear of, oh, I need to rely on this thing because I can't handle life if this happens to me.
Yeah.
And a lot of the work that we will be doing will be nervous system-based work. So people will, over time, during the program, learn how to expand their window of tolerance in their nervous system so they can have more emotional resilience to what happens. Mm. Like the things that happen to us now, and I certainly know from my own experience where I think, that had have happened to me 5 years ago, I would have completely collapsed in my own body. Mm. I would have not been able to hold all of that. And now the same things can happen, and my reaction to it, my ability to handle life is far greater, because I've got a bigger range of experience and a tools and ways to learn how to navigate that.
Mm. Yeah, so like, so...
So, oh, good.
So obviously, going back to this gentleman, he did exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, you know, on antidepressants, but he was still having panic attacks because he was every day, and he didn't understand why. And when we went back and we experienced that, as a child, he has a very abusive childhood. He was made to feel very unsafe. So then every day when he's going to work, when he's got just, you know, another gentleman, another man saying to him in a direct way, you know, are you messing? You could have done that a little bit better. Do you know, like just being one of the, yeah. The thingies that was actually triggering him and that he didn't realise he was getting a trigger. Mm. The reality that was he was in, he didn't realise that actually what it was saying, it was bringing up a recycled experience of his childhood and him being beaten up and him not being able to communicate or whatever. And what was happening, the emotion was just too overwhelming for him. Yeah. So he was disassociating, having a panic attack and everything. He come on the programme. You know, he got all of the wisdom, all of this, you know, all of the wisdom, all of the mind work, but then he was able to actually sit in this discomfort and work through it for the first time. Can you imagine how much, how that felt through? And he's come off his antidepressants and he hasn't had a panic attack in over 6 weeks.
Oh,
amazing. I mean, as a coach, that's like, that's what you want.
You want for you.
This is what you're doing it for. You're just doing it for somebody else's joy. Yeah. Do you know, and he was really upset and he was really like, and I remember him saying to me, you know, I just don't want my son to be able to, I want to be a better dad. I don't want him. And it wasn't that he isn't a better dad because he's an amazing human being. But what he's saying is my son's witnessing me not be able to regulate my emotions. And that's amazing that he can even have that.
It's a perfect example of what we were saying then. Like if you, the labels that were put on him and the, oh, this is because you've got this. You've got this wrong with you. And when I first met him, it was just like labels of all these mental health conditions and you'll never be able to do this and you'll always relapse, you'll fall if you're white. And it was like, no.
Yeah.
No. We can stop these things and work through these things. But then it's a perfect example of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Stop drinking and using.
Yeah.
And then we've worked through everything. And then now that's a perfect example of...
still triggers.
There's that.
There's still something coming up.
The triggers there from the childhood stuff and the abuse and whatever. Yeah.
And when that comes up, you know, that person's going back into the 11-year-old version of themselves or whatever age they were when they've had that first experience.
Yeah.
That's not being cleared out of their system.
Because we don't just want them, like, you're strong enough now and you control your addiction enough not to relapse. Mm. But I also don't want them fighting that like, forever.
Yeah, we don't want them feeling
that. I want
that.
More. Yeah. Yeah. I want, like, you're never going to relapse either, but I don't want you feeling like... I mean, still sort of in fight or flight when these triggers come up. I want you right, okay, we know that you're not going to carry on drinking and using when these things come up, which is what he's done his whole life.
Yeah.
Now we're in the position, and now we'll get in here and swim around, and this we'll filter this out, and we'll deal with this.
You know, I know you've spoke to this before, like people who've gone through recovery, and not just, you know, in your program, but in other programs out there, but they're in a state of existence, and they're not feeling what they could be feeling, and then, you know, if people aren't strong in their sobriety, there's that question that comes up is, well, was my life better before? Because at least then I wasn't feeling all these things. And that's why it's so important to get to the unraveling and the root cause of why we feel the way we feel, because then when that voice does activate, even with all of the tools, you're minimizing the chances of relapse.
You've just brought me onto something here, which was like, because we've got like 20,000 followers or something. There's a lot of people, but they didn't all come through the programme. I get a lot of messages from people who were like, who were in recovery from all over the country. People in Liverpool who been in recovery for years, didn't come through break free, maybe been in recovery even longer than we've even been established, but they still message me with the, I'm still not happy. Can I join the programme? And then they don't, because it's, but I haven't drank and used now for 6 years or 5 years. But this constant seeking of attention, approval, validation, poor choices, they're still living in chaos.
Yeah.
And they message me sporadically every couple of months and they're like, I'm just still not happy, I still don't feel right. And but I haven't drank and took a drug. And this is what I mean. So there's so many people out there in recovery now, didn't maybe come through our programme, but they're just... one day at a time, or they're just, I'll never drink again, but they're still not fulfilled. They're still, and I think
they're living in another prison, aren't they?
And go, well, this constant, I remember, like, this constant pursuit of validation. Please just tell me I'm all right.
And do you know what? It's because
it's just relentless.
We're all trying to feel something. You know, we want to feel whole, complete, accepted, and loved for who we are in our natural essence. And when we can't create that experience from within, we seek that from other people. We outsource all of that.
Constant. People just, and it's like, I was right for it. Even have to check myself now. It's like,
I've got good boundaries.
But it was right. But I see it, and a lot of the people who message me, maybe on the socials, I see these things. I say, I can't unsee what I'm seeing, and I see this need for this work in other people who are years who haven't used for. But this.
So just to be clear, we are inviting everybody who would like to join onto our level two, Beyond Breaking Free. They do not need to have gone through the Break Free level one programming.
Yes, that's the requirement.
You've got drinking drug free for a sustained period of time. You can't just go, oh, because exactly what we're talking about, you're not going to be able to fix your addiction with these.
No, of course not. They have to go into level one. Yeah, for,
but like, I do speak to people who were people who I was in, who I was maybe in addiction with years ago, like haven't used for like 7 years, but you seem happier, or you and me seem different, or how are you going to reminisce, or I still end up on the wall, and it's the comparing recoveries on time frames.
Yeah.
And I think it's quality of time. It's not length of time. They're going, but I haven't used for so long, and why I use like this? And it's like, this is because I've done a different type of work. I've maybe put more work on a deeper level, or I've done my recovery certainly from an addiction point of view. I still see them cross addicting still.
I
have the line now for the gambling and the womanising and the cheating and the taking opiates and the
It's
all the behaviours,
like,
isn't it?
It's even the attitudes, isn't it?
Like, I haven't had a drink or a lime, but you're still feeding your addiction all sorts. That's, again, trigger people, get the link. For me, that's not recovery. I haven't had a line for 6 months, but I was having the odd thing, or taking cannabis, or sleeping tablets every night, and Red Bulls all day, and then womanizing over weekend, and then scratch cards when I put. I haven't had a drink.
I think the hardest ones are probably the substance ones. They're the big ones. They're like the equivalent of our big T traumas. Oh, it's so, you can't not see those because they're so evident. Mm-hmm. It's the hidden ones, isn't it? Where people don't identify that they're seeking validation through social media, on the phone, through, you know, the odd scratch card, or the womanizing, and all of those things. They're the ones that go hidden. And almost because they don't get to a chronic level, people never actually get into the work of looking at that.
Or food as well.
Food, is another big one.
There's so many of them. But this is like what we're talking about here with this level of awareness. It's the same thing in the recovery world. Because I had a season ticket for every service you can imagine. I was there. Little plaques with my name on the benches in there, honestly. But I saw...
You shouldn't laugh, but you know what?
But like... The awareness that I had around it was like, oh, well, how long was it till you've had cocaine? Yeah. I haven't had, but then if it was like, or do you want to go to a doctor? My life's a mess, I feel like killing myself. Well, are you taking cocaine every day? Yeah, well, maybe let's stop that. Then see how you get on before I go, oh, do you want some extra drugs? Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, do you want some sleeping tablets as well? Go on, find sleep. Well, maybe that's all the classes. Yeah.
Do you think you're in psychosis? That's the classic one, isn't it? I have voices in me, I've got psychosis, not me addiction.
So it was, for me, that's what I'm talking about, awareness with the addiction side of things, our level of awareness and break free. I'm just saying it, compared to all the other services I was in, it was different. It was understanding. And also, I haven't had a line, but I've given it this.
Yeah.
I'm seeing validation, I'm doing this. And it was like, it's totally different.
It's feeding the same beast, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's the peace, peace of mind from your addiction. It's like, I'm not tormented by it.
Yeah.
And this is what I mean. Then it's like, look at all this stuff.
But I need to...
And then there's that level of awareness. And that's why we say, like, you have to have an understanding and awareness around controlling your addiction.
Yeah.
So if there's people who I do speak to who haven't used for periods of time, but they're still not happy.
Yeah.
Still not fulfilled. They lack purpose or whatever.
Yeah.
I just see it, or they tell them. I don't have to, I'm not approaching people. I would never do that. But they're messaging me saying, what's up? Do you know what I mean?
So I'm glad that people are messaging you, and someone else that always messages are the family members.
Yeah. This is such a huge one, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think it's important that we let everyone know that that's why we are actually running a program alongside the Beyond Breaking Free Level 2 for family members, aren't we?
Yeah.
This is another thing. Again, I've been speaking about, God knows how long, years. It must be about 2 years where I've been, I'm going to drop a day on a Sunday. And it's like what we were talking before, overcommitting. Because, I feel emotional saying it, but it's like when I speak to these people's mums, it's like I'm reading messages off my mum.
It's triggering, isn't it?
It triggers this way for me. I'll click the link. What I put my poor mother through. And then I see these people, like I'm speaking to someone now, do you know what I mean? His mum, and what happens is they want their kids or partners or family members to join, and they're desperate, and they're pushing them into it, and then they join, but they don't want it, they leave, and then the mums are like, or the family members, I wish there was somewhere for me to, and I was like, we're going to set something, but again, a dropping day of a Sunday, that's not enough.
It's not enough,
real proper programme like what we've created here. Because they're living, like my poor mother, like what I put her through. And I even said to my mum, look, I don't want to bring all that back up. Because she's just been through fear.
And, you know, we can certainly speak to the family aspect, because that's been our journey. And it's you know, you get to such a desperate level as a family member because you don't want to lose somebody that you truly love. And you feel very powerless about what you can do. And then you flip into like controlling behaviors. You have all these different tactics that you try and use. You go on the attack and you blame and shame. Mm-hmm. Then you try and put your arm around the shoulder. Mm-hmm. Come on, let's do this together. What support do you need? And you lose such a lot of trust because you're constantly given these promises that you want to believe in more than that person.
And that's where the controls, you know, so the opposite of trust is control. So my mum would be like, yeah, making plans for me, or I'll come to yours, we'll come and do this. And then I'd be like, yeah, because if I made plans for us the weekend and you can come and stay in mine and I'll book us away, you can come on holiday. And it was always trying to do anything she could.
Just to keep you safe, isn't it?
To keep me safe.
Yeah, can you imagine like how that felt for her nervous system, just being like trying to micromanage every single part of your behaviour because she
and
thought
I,
you were going to die.
I was suicidal and I was in prisons and hospitals and hanging myself, and it was just I think for years though.
Yeah. Like, and as a dad yourself, you can feel that, can't you? Because you've put yourself in that situation.
Yeah. And I think back and think,
like for parents, for me, you've got to go against every part of your human nature to pick your kids up and protect. We are, you know, great parents are here to protect and provide. And that's what you want to do when your child is in danger, do you know, or in danger in their own life. But we actually understand that that can enable the behaviour.
Absolutely, yeah, because you're so scared. And my mum used to say, don't say nothing to him, don't upset him because emotions kick off.
And you know yourself.
And you could probably play on that.
Manipulation, you know, it's the off-ground tick card. Don't say that because I might go out news and that's not my
fault. Nothing
was
off limits. Yeah. And I'll say this open. Nothing and no one was off limits. I would manipulate anyone. My addiction would. When I was in addiction and I didn't have no control over it, no one was off limits. There was no boundaries. There was nothing I would have done, said. It's that level. And you're so convincing.
Oh, yeah.
You are so convincing. You know what? A lot of the time, you're just two parts of the brain. Part of your brain is lying. Your own, you believe it. You're so convincing sometimes because you believe it. No, I will. I promise you, I won't go missing. I will. I'll come home because your addiction is telling you that. You believe your own lies. Yeah. So you are very convincing. And then afterwards, you're like, I don't know what have I done. I can't believe I have done this.
Yeah.
But then that trauma, like that is years of conditioning, fight or flight. And
so that's complex trauma for your mum.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I speak 100%. To God knows how many. Honestly, no exaggeration. I must have had Thursday. So I've been in seven conversations probably, because there's 14. So about seven conversations with family members just since Monday.
Yeah.
That's just this week of mum's partners. And then they're like, and when I mentioned, look, I'd love that. So there's a massive need, not just to drop in, I'll come in and I'll give you a couple of hours, like a proper program by experts like yourselves who are in a much better situation to advise, because you've got the lived experience. It's not I've been the addict. It's all about me. It's that you've been, and you're very much more relatable to the person. You've lived the experience from that side.
And we had to, you know, it forced us to go into the work. And before that, you know, and just even speaking for myself, I'd already done a level of work. And you think, oh, I'm good now. And then you're presented with these situations and there's nothing that equips you for dealing with addiction. You know, it's if you've never experienced it before in the family unit, you feel very lost. And I think the services out there for families are quite limited. And that's why often as a family member, you turn to the recovery services to say, like, what is it I need to do? But as you've said, you know, your expertise is dealing with the person in recovery.
And you know, a lot of, you know, you've just said there, you know, you'll have experienced this. A lot of the time then it can be like the recovery service and the addict. And there's quite resentment there. It's like us and them against them because, well, Bravery said or my service said. And again, that'll be manipulation. But sometimes the partner or the family member can feel a little bit like left behind or not included. So this is a perfect opportunity for come together, heal together, work together, all understand what we're all doing together. But proper work.
It's compassionate awareness, isn't it?
Compassionate awareness whilst also inviting accountability, you know, for our own well-being. Like you was talking about that, it makes me feel like really sad, really, just in a sense of obviously our lived experience. You know, and anybody who's worked with me will know a big part of my life is loving somebody who is the right term, like struggled or in addiction, and you know, hasn't come through the other side of recovery. And I think for me, and I know what it feels like to, I'd stay up. You know, they might be out till 8 in the morning, 10 in the morning. I'd stay up, like literally stay up, like terrified. Where am I going to find them? Am I going to find them dead? Do you know? Tracking the phone, my nervous system, you know, on high alert all the time. And I think one of the most, we were talking about the dark night of the soul, a moment where it's just like, I can't live like this anymore, was me on the floor, and this sounds insane, like literally pulling my own hair, rolling around on the floor, screaming, crying. And I was praying to a God I didn't even believe in at the time. It was like, please, God, fucking save me instead of save him, because it has always been about save him. But I mean, I got to the point where I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror, like, because I hated who I had become. Like, I had no love for myself, like absolutely no love for myself. Like, how can I? I'm in a relationship in which there's absolute chaos constantly. Like, I'm literally existing. Like, I was in such a bad way, like mentally a bad way, you know, like I nearly died trying to save him.
Save someone else.
And I got to the point where I need to fucking save myself here. Like, literally, I need to save myself. I'd lost all my friends. I was so isolated. You know, that common thing, like you probably have it in addiction where people go, come on, you can just do it. Come on now. Like, and but you're in that chaos. And no doubt that you can do it because you're proven that it can. But sometimes, like, when you're a partner or a parent or somebody you love, they'd say, oh, you know, my friends at the time would be like, you know, he doesn't love you, just leave him. And it's just, it wasn't that easy. We're talking about somebody you love who's literally killing themselves. It's not that easy to just completely detach. Do you know what I mean? You bring kids into it and you're balancing them. Well, you know what I mean?
Do you still hold on to that? If I can just make them okay, I'll be okay.
Yeah, you like
I'll fix me through them.
Yeah, when they're happy, I'll be happy.
Like, you get so maybe so far into it that you're like, I can't just give up now.
I think also you carry guilt because you don't want to abandon another person because you understand that this is an unwell person that you're dealing with. And, you know, I think if you do have like an empathetic nature, that is something that you feel you carry massive guilt and shame around because, you know, what kind of human being am I if I leave this person and I'm knowing what the consequences could be? And the biggest challenge is having to accept that, as you will know, you can't take somebody on a journey that they're not ready to go on. And until that person is truly, truly ready to seek help because they've had enough, you're really limited in what you can do. But what you're in staying in that situation, that toxic situation with limited boundaries, you're putting yourself in a very unwell, and sometimes a high risk situation, and you're abandoning yourself. The self-abandonment is something that I think a lot of family members really struggle with, especially people who are close, like the partners and the parents. That is a huge piece of that puzzle, and the work that we will do with families is understanding the behaviours of from our side as a family member, that what keeps us stuck, you know, what can we do to support that person in a way that is healthier, but firstly by supporting ourselves and better understanding ourselves.
Yeah, empathy definitely kept me stuck, and empathy shouldn't be a tool to not have your boundaries. And I would just think, as soon as I witnessed him, I would straight away immediately, like you said before, go to his childhood and be like, I can't leave him.
You make excuses for them, don't you?
Point of view, because this is what I remember, what I was like, and what I imagine a lot of them are like. I wasn't horrible all the time.
No, you're the most amazing people.
Yeah, I remember bumping into my old manager outside Boris, and he went, you were always a nice lad, you were just a lost soul. But what I mean is, after you'd use, and then you come back to the person, and at that point your addiction's being fed, and you're broke, and you're like crying, and you're like, I'm so sorry, and I can't believe it. I think if someone's just horrible to you all the time, you can probably be a bit like,
It'd be easier.
If you love them, and then when they're addiction, they're drinking, they're usually going missing, and then you don't know where they are, and then they come back, and you see this person so broke, and you're like, I'm gonna fucking leave them like that. And I think people see me like that because I was so sorry for what I'd done. It wasn't like, oh, fuck yes. I'll come back and I'll be like, I can't believe what I've done.
It's like you're living with two people, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's what I say. You are not your addiction. The things I've done in addiction, I've never replicated. The choices I made in addiction, when my addiction made my choices and the type of person I turned into, night and day now. But when my addiction had control, I was horrible. and I would manipulate, and it whatever, it was like, you know what I mean, it's so dominant that you'll do anything, your addiction will do anything to get the drink and drugs, and then, like an appetite, once it's being fed, you are then left with this way, the self-loathing. I hated myself.
Yeah.
I mean, hated myself, because I then, once I'd, my addiction had been fed, I'd have to go back to my mum, my kids, my partners, and be like...
You've got to see the devastation through sober eyes, haven't you?
I suppose it's from your point of view, and I was genuine. I wasn't like, at that point, there was no minute place. I was genuinely broke and hated myself for what I'd done to these people. And I think...
You just want to love them.
They also see that, don't they?
And the words you hear are so like, do you think I want to be like this? Do you think this is what I choose?
And you know what? And then in that moment, you'll promise you won't do it again.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean is, you know, them promises, you mean.
Yeah.
Them ones when you go, I swear, because you feel like, oh, no, I can't do this to you. I can't do this myself. And them ones, and then you get that little bit of like... I hope you won't.
And we attach to the hope.
He's never done this before. I promise you. And then it happens again. And then you're broken more. I'm broken more. And then we're trying to fix each other with the broken pieces of each other.
Yeah. Feel like everybody will understand if they're a family member when I say this. You grieve somebody who's not yet dead. And sometimes you feel like it'll be easier if they were. Because
people understand that, don't they?
Because there is a person that you can, they're physically not there.
You're just watching them.
Do you know what I mean? And grieving somebody who's not yet dead every single day, going from hopeful to hopelessness, just on that swing constantly.
Mm. Well, think about it. That's like addiction, isn't it? You're high, you're low, you're high, you're low. It's like and that's exactly what we're experiencing.
Like an addiction just wrapped up in my skin.
Yeah.
So it's like, looks like a rough version, but it's like, my mum's like, I remember my mum sitting on my bed. She come in after I'd been missing and I'd been kicked out, was back, and she come in and she just sat on my bed and she said, what happened to you? She went, you used to be a lovely lad.
Oh.
I'm thinking, what if you're that now? And I remember thinking, and I knew she was right. She went, you've turned into someone who you hate.
Yeah.
She was like, them day ring in my ears, them words, you know what I mean? Brutal.
I feel dead emotional, you know? I feel like I need a big cry. But.
And this is why this is needed for people.
Yeah.
Because people... We're not even living in it no more, and see what we feel.
You still feel it,
people right now.
They're active in it.
In this.
They're in the thick of it.
Fucking necks, sorry for the book. Up to their necks in this.
And that's
right
what
now,
I suppose
still.
we want to go on to. Like, when me and Jem, as family members, you kind of begin to realise that he might be addicted to a certain substance, but I'm addicted to the chaos, to him, to love,
to
the validation, to the fixing, to the caregiving. Yeah. So we look at all of this, and one of the things that like we explore is like, let's look inwards. Why are we in a relationship that, you know, because nobody's putting a gun to our heads and making us stay there. And I remember somebody said that to me, and I was like, what do you mean? Nobody's making you stay there.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know they're not, but all of these things. But what I would like to say is, like, from this work of self-inquiry, of healing your nervous system, of understanding why you know, are part of the problem, the things that you need to heal from in your childhood, because that's what me and you, like, went on a self... I realised he was manipulating, I was manipulating. I was manipulating for him to not go out. I was manipulating him not drink.
Yeah.
He was controlling. I'm controlling. I'm controlling.
It's the mirror.
Like you were saying, the situations. Yeah. I'm controlling the situations so he doesn't go out, so he doesn't drink, so we don't go to certain ways, certain places, because I know what's going to happen. It's like there was no trust. Do you know what I mean? And all of a sudden, I realised that he just wasn't insane. I was absolutely insane. Like, you know, and I think this is like... And I have been to other services, and I do want to say, you know, they did help me, but there was a lot missing. And I feel like the mind, the body, the emotion, the nervous system, all of this, like from my awareness, is creating the perfect program to really make sure that we're not missing any blind spots. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so this is something that I'm compassionate about, and something that comes up on the program a lot, and it come up with everybody from Break Free is being able to hold themselves for the things that they put themselves through. Being able to look at the childhood and look at the parents, and being able to compassionately and empathetically understand why things happen to them. Do you know what I mean? And then understand, actually, and now it's the same with my children. So our work and our program just creates so much compassion, empathy, forgiveness,
understanding awareness,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And allows people to feel and be vulnerable. And this is how powerful it's going to be, because it's really going to stop us bleeding on our kids. And one of the things that I love and one of the things that I share in the program and that we say and like it empowers them is every experience that we've been through up until this point is here to evolve us.
Yes.
And all of our pain can be turned into our power and made purposeful. Look at you. Look at us. Like everything we've been through has brought us here. Do you know what I mean? And I want to send that message to everybody who's feeling a little bit low. There's a reason why you're going through this and you can liberate yourself from your own suffering.
We can tell ourselves a story that this is all happening to me, but the power is in realizing it's happening for you.
Yes.
And you know, like that is another trigger, because it's like, how can you mean these awful things are happening for me? It's here to shine a light on the work that's still to be done within you.
See, I put a post in the Break Free groups the other day around something like this. Like it was a So one day we'll sit down and we'll talk about how tough it was and how we got through it. And I shared the meme, and I shared it. Like, I love a good positive meme. I said, but it doesn't always work out like that, because we can read memes on social media and we all think that it's a God-given right that rocky roads lead to beautiful destinations, but not always.
Yeah, yeah.
Your pain turns to power, not always, because some people give up.
Some
people have a choice, but they stay in the victim mindset. Some people get in difficult moments and go back to drinking and using. Some people right now are in difficult, all the situation that we've been in, and then you have a choice of, you know what, right, I'm going to do something about it. And
you've
then
always got a choice.
Because we can be that positive meme or you can be another sad story.
And
I say that to people, I said, it's up to you. Because you can, if your life's really shit right now, don't think that you're going to read this meme and you're going to get that, because that's a God-given, it's not.
No, you've got to walk through the door.
You've got to take, whatever the situation is, whatever the current situation is, whatever's happened to you, you have to take ownership of it. And turn it in, not just like, oh, it's going to happen, because sometimes it doesn't. And that's why that's why Break Free and we're all doing what we're doing, and now we're bringing this program in. It's because there's so many people out there suffering. And when people leave the program, I was like, the work doesn't stop. And they were like, well, what work, where? We're seeing things that are needed. We're bringing it to people and going, but this will help you, but people have to help themselves.
There's so much power in personal responsibility. When you claim ownership of things, you know, you can't control the outcome, you can't predict the outcome, but you can certainly make decisions and go, well, what can I control within my life? And the things I can't control, I need to surrender to those. I need to let go. I need to trust and hand that part of the process over. But what I certainly do have control over is my choices, my decisions, my actions, how I choose to be in the world. And that is where we can claim our power back. And that is available to everybody. That is, you know, you don't have to be in the coaching space to claim that. You know, anybody can choose to do this work, and it is radical responsibility, and say, hands up, that was my stuff to deal with. And that stuff over there, we fixate so much on, well, you need to do this and you need to do that, and if they just do this then I'll be happy, if they just do that. But actually, all those things may be true, but if we put that to one side for a minute, if we just look in the mirror and go, wow, how am I here? How did I get here? Why am I still here? What do I choose to do about that?
That's it. It's like, you all depends. Like, whatever your story's been, how does it end? And it's like, I spent my whole life just being the victim in my own story. And it was like, just be the hero. Like, you can change the character now. You can decide whether you carry on being the victim in your own story that you're writing.
And it's acknowledging, that for a phase, you know, when you're in that victim mentality, and by the way, that doesn't mean that things haven't happened to you and you haven't had awful experiences that need to be honoured and witnessed.
But I was using the fact that people had hurt me as an excuse to hurt others.
Because what does that give you? When you're playing the role of the victim, what does that actually give you? You get something positive out of that. You get a positive experience.
Yeah, it might be validation, attention, all of these things.
And you get to kind of not have responsibility for it, don't you?
Because it was a lot more difficult for me to go, you know what, I'm going to change.
Because I was
so deep in, and I felt like I didn't know who it was. And that change is scary. Change was difficult. And it was easy. Giving up is easy. We can all give up. Everyone can stay in the shit bit. Everyone can keep blaming, because that's the easy bit. But I was sick of being that. And that's what I was saying. Like, you can get to a point and go, you know what? Whatever's gone on in my life up until this point, how this story ends is up to me.
But
in this own, like a pantomime villain of my own life, or playing this victim in my own story that I was writing, I thought, well, no, I'm sick of it. Start taking accountability. Without accountability, there is no change.
And often, like, in some ways, I don't know what your experience has been with the people that you've supported, but people who've been in more chronic situations actually end up being a little bit more fortunate, in the sense that it brings them to this space. When you're in that middle ground, the grey area of where well, yeah, life is still manageable, but it's not healthy. It's completely toxic. And, you know, a lot of people are sitting in that space, but it's just, it's still a little bit too comfortable, because the comfort zone is where you go to die, as they say. And that is the danger zone, really, because it almost takes something so extreme to force you into your dark night of the soul moment.
It's a region beats a paradox type thing, isn't it? It's better for something to get even worse for you to make the change.
Yeah.
Can stay in this, like, do you say grey area of, it's bad, but it's not bad enough for me to change it.
So I'll just plod on. And that's what you do, isn't it? Yeah. We put labels up. That's just how life is. Mm. That's just what you do. You go to a job that you're unhappy and you stay in a relationship that's not serving you. You know, you play the martyr or the victim or all of those things. We wear these labels.
Tolerate, isn't it? Human beings have an unbelievable to tolerate unhappiness convince yourself that you are. Or, as we were talking about before, tolerating like mediocrity, or you're not really in this happy place in your life, but you're comparing it to a time that you were maybe unhappier.
Yeah. So it's better than before.
I'm just a little bit better than before.
But what we say, and I know you say it as well, get comfortable being uncomfortable. Yeah. It's like we need to lean into the discomfort, don't we?
And it's a choice.
It is a choice.
Well, we broke down the programmes and the other things that we're offering. You are the mastermind on this, Jen.
Where can you sign up?
We sign up.
Yes.
Where can you sign up,
where
Jen?
Where can we sign up? There will be a link below, as they say. But the programme starts in June. There's a waitlist available now, which, Marcus, you've been circulating. And so that'll be available by the time this podcast is out. The website will be up and running so that you will be able to click to sign up to guarantee your space for the programme that starts in June. It will be a 12-week programme. We'll be running two containers in two separate groups, but starting the same week. One will be for people coming out who've had the recovery experience, who've got into sobriety and want to do this work. And another container will be friends and family or anyone affected by addiction who wants to go through this work and do a deeper journey into themselves and get support around that. And it will be a 3-month container, 12-week programme. There'll be online materials, but it will be an in-person session as well, where we will do a lot of the embodiment work that we're going to teach. We're going to teach 12 modules across that period in time. There'll be an online community to be supported. It'll be a whole host of things. It will be a massive unravelling.
We're excited.
It's an exciting journey. Honestly, it's time to level up, isn't it?
It's something that I've just been thinking about for so long now, and it's you two, basically, is the... what I was thinking, what I wanted to do is it's not possible without you two. So I just want to say, like, thank you very much. I'm very grateful.
Thank you. We're really excited.
Yeah. The opportunities come because of the work that you've done and everybody in the Break Free space. And, you know, we've got a lot of friends who've come through that community, haven't we? You've been part of the same community.
Like,
as
some
us.
Of my best friends have come through Break Free. Yeah. And, like, I am so thankful for the gifts and the work that
they've inspired a lot of this collaboration, haven't they?
I see so many things, like, in concepts and bit of recovery and trauma heal, and it's like I've always had in my mind, it's like having all the right ingredients but putting them in at the right point and then you get the perfect cake. It's like, but sometimes you're trying to put things in at the wrong time. We've got the right ingredients it's putting them in at the right time and having the right knowledge and doing it in the right way. Like, I've always thought, like, this, I always think there's so much more here, there's bits missing, there's things we need to add on. I'm seeing things, and it was the you'll have like a, but honestly, I believe what we're offering, no one's doing.
I think
it's like a blueprint here for recovery, well-being, healing. And I think we're getting the ingredients now and we're getting them all in at the right point. And I'm so excited for it.
And we're going to make a difference. And that's the most important thing, aren't we? And
it's nobody, the ripple effect, isn't it?
And we're given an opportunity for nobody to be left behind.
Yeah.
What a way to finish.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So we are going to invite everybody to hit, share,
like,
subscribe. Any more buzzwords?
We would love you to comment under our posts. We would love you to engage. We would love you to share with us if any of this hits you or lands with you in a certain way. And we'd love you to also share with us what topics in the future you'd like us to explore a little bit more of. And again, we're here to save. So thank you so much. Have a beautiful day.
Yes. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.